So this is Home Straight, decisions about love, sex, marriage, about love life. I want to basically ask three questions. Whether, who, and how. Now, again, just reiterate, I'm talking to single people at this point. Married people have some different decisions to make, but I want to address people who are not yet married, because I think they're the people who are making these sort of decisions. And I want to build on what we've done before, so I'm going to use the sort of framework, the biblical framework that we've been outlining, and try and see where the rubber hits the road. So, first question is whether. That is, whether to get married or stay single. Now, biblically, I hope you realise that that's a live choice and an option that the Bible gives you, even though for many of us, our culture, our background, our instincts tell us that it's not a live issue. That is, for many of us, the idea of not getting married is almost too hard to contemplate. Our culture tells you, unless you can hook up, whether you're married or just cohabit, to be left on the shelf when you're 30, 35, 40 is to be a failure in life. But 1 Corinthians 7, a whole chapter about marriage, actually most of it is about whether to get married. Most of it is trying to persuade us that it's a good thing, it's often a helpful thing, to stay single for your life and not get married. And that's built on the assumption that marriage is not essential for real life. On the second back page of your book, you'll find a list of myths about sex. And most of the myths actually have to do with, if you don't have sex, somehow you're less than real human. You've missed out on something essential to human life, to human experience. You're crippled in some way. It's just not true. You don't need to get married, you don't need to have sex to be a full human being in God's world as one of God's children. And as we've suggested, getting married won't solve all your problems. It'll just change them from one sort to another sort. One of the sad things is that many Christians and others are so committed to getting married that they'll disobey God in order to marry someone God says not to marry. It's really an idol at that point, I think, isn't it? It's become something that to us is more important than God himself. If we're willing to disobey God to marry someone that God says not to marry in order to get married. So there's a warning for us in this option of whether to get married or not. It's irrelevant in the end to godliness, to living a life that honours God, that pleases God, that enjoys God's goodness to us, whether we're married or single. You don't get closer to God by being single or by being married. You can be godly in either situation. And so I want to encourage you to think about the advantages of remaining single. Paul talks about singleness as a gift in 1 Corinthians 7 and marriage as well as a gift. I'm not quite sure whether he's saying that just the fact of being married or single is a gift. He's certainly saying that the capacity to be content single is a gift from God. That is, there are some people, I think, for whom the desire to get married, the drawing towards someone to be married is less strong than others, and that makes it easier to be single. It's not a matter of morality, of right and wrong, being single or married. It's simply a matter of pragmatics. There are some great advantages in being single, and I'd like you to consider those. I really appreciate Heidi, who's among us, who at the moment is single, and she's using that singleness to great effect. The ministry she's doing at UWA, her capacity to move across the world to come and join us in serving Jesus at UWA have come mainly because she's still single. And we really appreciate that, and we honour God for it, and we honour her for it. If you're single and you want to be married, the big issue, I think, is there someone willing to marry me? For some of us, at least, that's an issue. Now, can I say at this point, there's nothing in the Bible that says that a girl can't ask a guy to marry them. Okay, I know there's a culture that says the guy's supposed to take the initiative, and it may have some effects on the structure of the relationship, but not for long. If you're interested in someone, feel free to take the initiative, not just in leap years. But if you're single and you're not involved with someone at the moment, can I encourage you to use your singleness well? Part of it is being content where you are. Even if you'd like to get married, if you'd like to be in a relationship and you're not in one, well, God is working all things for your good. I know that can feel hard to believe, but it is true. And so thank God for your singleness and look for good opportunities as a single person to contribute to the work of Jesus, to get involved in things that if you were in a relationship, maybe you couldn't give as much time to. Does that mean you stop thinking about getting married? No. Ask God to provide. That's God says, lay all your burdens on him. If you'd like a relationship, ask God for it, but trust God to provide in his time and his way. And ask God for contentment in the meantime. It's always easy to think the grass is greener on the other side of the hill. But see how green the grass is on your side of the hill at the moment. And with the help of God, seek to be content. And in that sense, even if you are keen to start a relationship, please don't treat every girl or guy as a prospect, as meat market. You walk into a room and all you think about is, who are the girls here? Who are the guys here? I wonder if any of them would be interested in me. That's a terrible way to live for you and for them. Yes, there's time to take initiative. We'll come to that in a second. But try and be content as you are, rather than make all life revolve around trying to start a relationship. Secondly, if you do want to get married, you decide you don't want to stay single, the big question is who? Who will I marry? And as I said, they've got to be willing, but you get some choice in this, at least to start with. And I want to say three things about it. Do what is right, your freedom, and do what is wise. Firstly, do what is right. The Bible is quite clear about what sort of person makes a right partner for marriage. And as far as I can see, there's four things involved. They really come pretty much straight out of the definition we had earlier. They must be of the opposite sex, not a close relative like your sister or your mother. They need to be free to marry, and they need to be a Christian. That's pretty easy, is it? Now, most of those are pretty straightforward to work out. Can you work out whether they're the opposite gender or not? Look around. Can you work that out? It's usually fairly straightforward, isn't it? Not difficult. Just work that one out. Secondly, not a close relative. That's usually pretty straightforward. Free to marry. Now, if they're married already, they're not free to marry. Sometimes that gets a bit complicated. Somebody who's been in a relationship, maybe they're separated or divorced, that can be complicated, but not normally. And then Christian. So if you are a Christian, God says only marry a Christian. If you're not a Christian, please don't marry a Christian till you become one. And I hope you do become one. Now, God is very clear on that. We saw that in 1 Corinthians chapter 7. She's free to marry who she wants, but it must be in the Lord. They must be a Christian. Sometimes that's not easy to work out because somebody who's 18, maybe grown up in a Christian family, Christian background, their own convictions may not have consolidated yet. They may still be floating around. You may need to give them a bit more time to see whether their heart really is in trusting and serving the Lord Jesus. But generally speaking, it's not hard to work that out. And God is saying, that's the pond to fish in, and somebody who's not in that pond, just don't fish in it. Don't go there. It's not where to look. Don't look elsewhere. So, only in the right pond, but amongst those people, the second thing to say is, you're free to marry anyone you want to. Now, for some people, that's a terrible bit of news. For other people, it's a terrific bit of news. They don't have to be of your race, of your age, of your intelligence, at your university, of your social status, doing the same degree as you are. No, you're free to marry anyone you want to. And the assumption in that is that any marriage can work. Any marriage can work between a man and a woman. If you work at it, if both of you are sufficiently godly, Christ-like, the marriage can work. But I don't think that's how we think. We tend to think, oh, hold on, Tim, what if we're not compatible? Well, what sort of compatibility are you talking about? Because compatibility is a very slippery thing, isn't it? If you say, maybe we're not sexually compatible. Listen, God's been making bodies for thousands of years. He knows how to do it. That will be fine. Don't get head up about that. But what about if they're not the sort of person I'm just attracted to, I fall in love with so naturally? Well, so what? That's not essential to marriage. It's nice if it happens. And on top of that, I reckon if you spend enough time with a person and you genuinely care about them, you put yourself out for them, you'll fall in love with them. It's not a problem. You don't have to fall in love beforehand. Now, I hate to prove things by anecdote, because anecdote is not a good way to prove anything, but let me tell you an anecdote that illustrates this. It's a very famous one of Martin Luther and his wife Catherine, Katie, as he called her. Now, the reason Martin Luther married Catherine was to keep a promise he made. If those of you who know of Martin Luther, he was one of the people who kick-started what was called the Reformation in Europe in the 1700s. So 1517, he nailed his 95 Theses to the door of the castle in Wittenberg, which was a protest against some of the abuses of the Catholic Church at the time, and that kick-started a whole lot of things. And one of the things that it kick-started was an understanding, a realisation, that you're not more spiritual by being single. So in his time, everybody who wanted to be really spiritual was a single priest in a monastery or a nun in a nunnery, and you didn't get married because that was to reduce your level of spirituality, take you further away from God. They realised that that was just wrong, because Jesus is the one who brings you close to God, not whether you're married or single. So that meant that the Reformation started to disband many of the monasteries and nunneries, Luther's monastery included. There was a nunnery down the road, and many of the women in the nunnery who were nuns, and therefore single, believed these new doctrines, these biblical doctrines, and so they decided to disband the nunnery. But the trouble was, in that culture, a single woman had no visible means of support, no means of support, and so it would be very difficult for them to just return out to normal society. So Luther said to all the women in the nunnery, all the nuns, "I will find husbands for you in the next 12 months." And that gave him the courage then to leave the nunnery. And he did, except 12 months later, when the calendar clicked around the 12 months, one of the women, Catherine, was still single. So to keep his word, he married Catherine. Now, how unromantic can you get? Like, it's just to keep his word, just to make sure that she wasn't left out on the street. He married her. But if you've read any of the love letters between Katie and Martin, they are the most affectionate, intimate, some of them even erotic love letters that you can imagine. I mean, Luther was a very earthy sort of man anyway, but they fell in love. They gave themselves, they promised to love one another, they did set out to love one another, to share life, to become unified, and the love and affection and attraction between them just blossomed and grew in that context. And most marriages in the history of humanity have been more like that. They've often been arranged marriages. They move into, I'm not saying every arranged marriage is perfect, but this idea that you've got to be somehow emotionally compatible and in love with them before you can marry someone or think about marrying them, simply is not true. If you want that, that's your choice. So if you look around this room, you look around your Christian Union group at uni, there are actually lots of people you could marry, aren't there? Now, I guess we could just put names in a hat and draw them out. You probably wouldn't like that, and, well, I won't do it then. I'm not opposed to it, but wouldn't do it unless you wanted me to. But what it shows is that there's something that's infiltrated and infected us that's really come from Hollywood and Bollywood and those sort of places, which is that you've got to find Miss Right, you've got to find Mr. Right in order to have a good marriage. There's one person out there somewhere, if you can just find them, and when you find them, you'll just know. Your eyes will meet across the room, and in that instant, you'll know they're the one for me. And even if you're married before, even if you are married at the moment, you meet the right one, then you dump the one you have had, you go with Mr. Right, Mrs. Right. And as Christians, we've sort of baptised that idea. God has the one for you. And so we start desperate search parties, agonising over, is this the right one for me, Lord? Is this your person for me? But that's not how the Bible speaks, is it? 1 Corinthians 7, marry who you want to. You're free to marry whoever you like. Now, there is a little grain of truth in it. Little grain of truth is that if you get married, God does have one person for you to be married to. And you'll know precisely who that person is the day after you get married. Because God has joined you together. Therefore, that is the right person. Fat lot of good that is? Yeah, it is actually a lot of good. Because it means once you're married, you stay with that person. They're the person God... Sorry? No, there's not. It's then, at the time. Yep. Thank you, Rosemary. She likes being precise. I love it. Okay, so you're free to marry who you want to, but it is true that not all guys or girls are the same quality of marriage material. And so a question the Bible encourages us to ask is, would they be a wise choice? Some people are foolish choices. Now, you're free to make a foolish choice, but you'll live with it for a long time. You marry a pig, you'll wallow in the mud. Now, our society has its form of wisdom. Our media has its form of wisdom. What's a wise choice? Well, if you're a girl, it's a guy who's about 5 centimetres taller than you, 2 years older than you, similar intelligence, not too much more than you, but not less than you, is loads of fun, is physically attractive and buff, is got good work prospects and career prospects, is terrific in bed. And that is dumb. It really is dumb. Or it's the most beautiful girl in the room. But beauty is fool's gold. It's short-lived, doesn't last that long. It might impress you for a while. It says nothing about what they're like to live with, what they're like to love and serve and enjoy life with. It's no guide to that whatsoever. In fact, they'll just cost you more and more money. You've got to ask the question, if we're going to work out what is wise, what destroys marriages? That'll help us work out what's wise. And Jesus is quite clear, isn't he? It's hard-heartedness. It's sinfulness, selfishness. That's what destroys marriage. So what's a wise choice? A wise choice is a godly person, a Christ-like person. Girls, who is it that you can respect and submit to? Well, some people are very hard to do that to. Some guys are very hard because they abuse you and use you. But a loving guy, a guy who will get down on his knees and serve you, someone who will lay down his life for you, that sort of guy, like Jesus, will be very easy to live with, even if he's fat and short and bald and ugly. Where do you find that sort of person? Well, you probably don't find them on romantic dates. Of course, I'll let you in on a secret. Guys can pull it off for a few dates, okay? Guys can be really charming and gracious and nice when they're out there on the special date with you, and you're all dressed up and they're all dressed up and you're doing something exciting. Any guy can pull that off, almost. I know some guys can't, but most guys can. Now, if you want to work out whether they're a godly guy, whether they're like Jesus, watch them in normal life. Watch them when no one else is watching. Will they patiently care for that obnoxious person, that antisocial person, the person who will rebut their attempts to be generous and kind to them? Are they sensitive to the needs and pains of others? Do they notice when other people are having difficulty and try and do something about it? Are they willing to serve joyfully? Will they go to the kitchen and do the washing up, even if nobody else sees? Will they do those sort of service things? Now, again, they can put it on. I remember once at one of our mid-year conferences, the speaker suggests that the way you can tell whether a guy is godly is whether they're willing to make you Milo. And that night, every girl got 3 cups of Milo. I couldn't believe it. I got none, or every girl got stacks. They can put it on, but watch them when they're not putting it on. Try and see them in those sort of situations. Will they take responsibility for things, or will they always just bypass it and go for the easy option? What about a girl? What sort of girl makes a wise choice? Well, 1 Peter 3 talks about the true beauty of the inward person, the gentle and quiet spirit. Doesn't mean they're not fun, they don't express themselves. Gentle and quiet is the opposite to the bossy, strident, pushy woman. And that sort of beauty just gets better and better as they get older. They're terrific to be with, and they don't spend all their time in front of the mirror putting makeup on and going for surgery. But you say, hold on, Tim, they're not much fun, they're not interesting. Well, let me tell you, I reckon everyone is interesting if you can unlock them. You ask the right questions. If you ever had that situation, you talk to somebody, they don't seem interesting at all, and you just ask the right question, and suddenly they're talking, and it's captivating. I hope that's happened to you. Somebody's asked you the right question. Everybody's interesting. They just need drawing out. Now, my observation is that Christians are often not much wiser than non-Christians. The good-looking girls get rushed. The extrovert cool guys get rushed. And the godly people often just get left on the shelf when they find each other, and my romantic heart loves that. Now, please don't get me wrong. I'm not saying beauty is wrong. No, beauty is a gift of God. Physical attraction, attraction of personality is a great thing. It's just often we overrate it. And can I say, especially to the girls, if you are a pretty girl, in some it's a two-edged sword, isn't it? Because it does mean often the guys are more attracted to you, but you're never quite sure whether they like you or just your beauty. It's a very difficult situation often to be in. And guys, we must treat them better than that. If the Bible's wisdom isn't guiding us, often it will lead to a more difficult life ahead. Let's be wise. So what's the wise choice? As I've suggested, it's someone who is godly in the right sort of way, feminine godly, masculine godly. Find that sort of person, and they'll be terrific to live with. They'll be full of love and patience. They'll be courageous and humble. They'll live by their convictions and their love for the Lord Jesus instead of being full of themselves. They'll have a heart for people, for the Lord Jesus, and for you. That's a great place to start. But please don't misunderstand me. You don't have to marry a godly person. If some godly person asks you to marry them and you don't want to marry them, you don't have to, okay? If you think, I need chemistry, without the chemistry, I just can't do it, well, don't do it. You'll live with the consequences, but you're free to do that. There's no obligation. But did you notice something, I hope, that doesn't sit quite right with all of this? The advice is, find a godly spouse. Do you see what's wrong with it? Because it's still going down the same track as Hollywood and Bollywood. If you find the right partner, then marriage will be good. That's the key. You find the right person to marry, you will enjoy married life. Do you smell the whiff of Satan's sulphur in that? That the choice of the person is the critical decision. If I find Mr. Right, Miss Right, all the pressure then is on them. My marriage will work if they live up to scratch, if they do it properly. That's just pig-headed selfishness, isn't it? Now, not who you marry is actually not very important as a decision. You can marry anyone in the pond. The thing that matters to God in your marriage is your godliness, is what you are like, the sort of partner that you will be or you are already. That's actually the biggest decision about who to marry, the sort of person that I will be. Will I be like Jesus? Will I put effort and energy into becoming more and more like Christ, growing in faith and love and hope? And when you think about it, it's obviously right, isn't it? My patience, my capacity to love, to lay down my life, my passion to serve Jesus and be faithful to him, that's what will make me a good person to live with, a great spouse for them. Now, again, you can muck this up, can't you? You can say, well, I'll put on being godly just to catch the right person. No, that's still just being self-centered. So that's who. What about how? How do you go about? So I want to get married. I want to start a relationship. How do I go about doing it? How do I go about getting there? Well, the Bible doesn't deal with any sort of method. It doesn't tell us this method, that method. The method of our society is basically the dating game. That is, you hook up with someone, you start dating, you go out with them, you have an exclusive relationship, and you keep doing that till you decide either to get married or break up. Now, that way of doing it is not Christian or anti-Christian. It's just one way of doing it. I'm not sure it's a very good way, but it's the way most of us have chosen. It's the way our culture does it. You can do it differently if you want to. And some of the students have done it differently. What does the Bible say about how? It doesn't say a lot. It does say, not in passionate lust like the heathen. Now, my observation is that the dating game generally pushes us to that end of the spectrum of the passionate lust, because the dating game is built on dates, on the private conversation and interaction between you. You go together somewhere, just the two of you. And so it's built on the physical attraction and therefore almost inevitably sexual arousal. You ask out to a romantic dinner, ask out to the movies. The two of you spend a whole lot of time together alone in situations basically designed to develop that physical sexual side of the relationship. And it's almost impossible in that situation not to get all sexually interested and turned on. And as I said earlier, sex is much more than intercourse. It starts with the romancing, with the emotional intimacy. That's all foreplay. That's meant to lead to sex, ultimately. And if you're relating sexually, you're bonding emotionally. You're getting overcommitted to one another. And when you're overcommitted and the hormones all kick in, your evaluation gets junked up. As somebody says, don't preheat the oven when you're not going to cook a cake. So I'm suggesting, actually, it's better not to engage in relationships till marriage is on the cards, till you're at an age and a maturity and a situation in life where you can consider getting married. And then when you do get married, you haven't used each other over lots of time. And because a wedding doesn't create a fresh start. When you get married, it's not as if everything that's happened before the wedding is suddenly forgotten and it's wiped out of your memory. It is very much part of your relationship. You build on that. You move forward from it. And let me tell you, sexually, you don't need to practice before the wedding. You've got years and years afterwards to explore and understand and come to know each other in that sort of way. And so I think it's better, rather than the dating game as most people practice it, to try and develop your friendship and relationship in real life situations with other people around, especially things like working together in serving Jesus, because that's where you'll really see where the other person's at. But you won't do it by this sort of interaction all the time. You'll be side by side, which is what marriage is meant to develop into. You will need some time for the two of you, yes, but talking and praying, not parking and groping. Now, you don't have to do the dating game. You've got a choice with it. Some people have done it differently. I remember a couple of people on the committee at UWA, they actually mucked it up a bit, I think. They spent a whole lot of time together but kept insisting we're not going out. And then they got engaged. They're now married. They've got three kids. It's doing well. But what I want to say is, whichever way you decide to do it, can I encourage you to be clear about your intentions? If you're asking someone to form a relationship with you, going out, however you want to describe it, it's a pretty risky thing to do, isn't it? You risk their rejection. You even risk them making fun of you. You risk being hurt. And so sometimes we avoid actually asking them. We try and beat around the bush. We try and just spend time with them and see if we click and see if they want to do something. Now, can I suggest that much better just to be upfront? If you decided, yes, you would like to sometime get married, and you've decided this is a person you'd like to explore that option with, then go and tell them that's what your hope is, what your intention is. And yes, it's risky, it's scary, but much better to do that than live in the ambiguity for them and for you when nobody knows what's happening. I've had too many times when, for example, I can remember another couple. They became a couple. But they were just people who hung around together and hung around even more together and even more together. But at first, there was nothing sort of happening, it would seem. And then one of them rushed up and said, they want to marry me. What do I do? It was like a surprise. But if you do spend a lot of time with someone of the opposite sex, almost inevitably one of you will get interested. One of you will think, actually, I like this person. I really enjoy their company. I'd like to make this more than it is at the moment. And that in itself, well, it's sort of like sliding into things rather than being clear about things. Now, don't just spend a whole lot of time with someone and, you know, maybe see what happens. Now, if you're interested, I think tell them that you're interested. Tell them what your intentions are. And be perceptive about the effects of that on them and on you. Care for them more than you care about whether they respond to you positively or not. And often, I think, if you do that well, you can return to simply, if you like, being friends, knocking around together. And don't treat going out and relationships as a completely private affair. I know in our culture, often, you know, we don't even tell our parents if we start a relationship. But your parents aren't against you, are they? I hope they're not. Most of your parents aren't. And I know they're really naive and they know nothing about romance and relationships and stuff, but give them the benefit of the doubt. It's often helpful to have your parents involved, knowing what's going on, and your friends as well. I know these days with Facebook, you can just plonk it up there, you know, begun a relationship. And that's not a bad way to do it, I think. It's not a terrible way to do it. I think we do need to let our friends know if their relationship has started, because it changes their relationship with us at some level. But especially if you're forming a relationship, the way you treat that person is what really matters in God's sight. Do what is best for them. Continue to lay down your life for them and love them, which isn't just about trying to get them to be what you want them to be. It's about serving them. And as you serve them, if they appreciate it, the love and the affection will deepen. But in the dating game, as we practice it, I've noticed that something happens for most couples if they've been going out for a little while. They get to the stage where they're not quite sure whether to go forward or backwards. They get to a sort of hiatus, an insecurity about the relationship. And I think what's happened is that the relationship has started well. They've enjoyed each other's company. They like each other. They're attracted to each other. They do some good things together. But they get to a point where they know that for the relationship to go any deeper, it actually needs a deeper commitment. But neither of them may be willing to make that commitment. Neither of them are willing to say, I'd actually like to get married. Will we do it? And at that point, most relationships become a bit unstable. They've either got to go forward or they'll go backwards. And it's a rocky time for many relationships. I've talked with many couples going out who've got to that point, and it's been difficult for them, because if neither of them are willing to say, yes, I'm going to jump in, hold us, bowl us, commit to this relationship, then the relationship does just stagnate and go nowhere. If that's the situation you're in, can I say you're amongst friends? It's fairly normal, but my advice is you really do need to make that decision. Will we commit? Will we get married? Will we move towards that consciously and deliberately? Because if you don't, it's very hard to tread water. In the end, it becomes fairly destructive. Now, if that's true, I think it adds to the idea that it's better not to start relationships till marriage is sort of in the foreseeable future option for you. Otherwise, you really do risk really just playing with each other's emotions. Going out with someone to make me feel good because I've got a girlfriend, I've got a boyfriend, they make me feel terrific, rather than doing it for them and for their good as your primary concern. It is difficult, yes, but it's something that with God's help we can do well.